From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. You've heard the advice 100 times by now. Stay connected while staying distant. And at this point, 2 months into stay-at-home orders, many of us have developed new ways to continue our relationships with friends, family, and colleagues, even as people are starting to complain of Zoom exhaustion and Facebook fatigue. But keeping up connections is vital to our health, and so this hour we'll explore many different ways of doing it. And Exchange listeners, how are you approaching this 8 weeks into the pandemic? What creative ways are you finding to connect, and how do those feel to you? Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. You can always use Facebook or Twitter, too, if you'd like. Our guests are Shanita Williams, Associate Vice President of Talent Engagement and Inclusion at Southern New Hampshire University, and Rachel Armstrong, Clinical Psychologist in Portsmouth with an expertise in health psychology. Welcome to both of you. And Rachel, I'll kick it off with you. We often hear that human beings are highly social creatures. We've heard that a lot lately. What does that mean exactly, Rachel?
Yes, Laura, being a social creature is all about what's been adaptive for us forever. And that means that we feel really good when we're with people. We feel safe, we feel trust, and we even see in our brains all those neurotransmitters fire and oxytocin is released when we're with people. So it's so important in so many ways.
So it's physiological. It isn't just, I feel happy. There's physical things going on in our bodies when we're with people we care about.
Yes, we can see it in people's brains when they're with people.
I've also read some statistics recently about loneliness. This was being talked about, by the way, before this whole pandemic hit. But what's the specific health impact, Rachel, of loneliness? I think I read something this morning. It's as bad as smoking a couple cigarettes a day.
Yes, there's a ton of research on this. And it's really fascinating that this gets amplified now because it certainly was a problem before. And now we see that without social support, or what they find too is without perceived social support, even if you think you don't have it, there's a huge cost to our health for that. And there's tremendous research about that and really important in the medical field that doctors see that, like you said, it's not just about smoking and obesity. Feeling alone is a huge downside to our health.
Wow. And Rachel, is there a psychological or physiological difference between seeing someone you care about in person versus seeing that person you care about on a screen? I mean, do we even know that yet?
I don't know if we know it exactly what happens, because it does seem that there is connection. And certainly we've all had long distance relationships. So this isn't entirely new. We've kept close bonds with people who live in other countries and had phone relationships and have felt a lot of value from that. So I do believe some of that is gained, but it's the chronic online connection that seems to be having maybe this impact where we're saying, where are we getting those bigger boosts where there's touch involved, where there's the variety of interactions?
Oh, that's interesting. So you can have a satisfying relationship with someone who, you know, lives on the other side of the country, but that can't be your only relationships. That seems to be what you're saying, Rachel.
Yeah, I think that's very true.
Yeah, interesting. I'm thinking about my college roommate who lives in Oregon. We don't see each other very much, but boy, we are in touch. But if that were my only friendship, that might be a problem. That seems to be the bottom line there. Go ahead.
Yes, and I find too that what we're seeing with this sort of Zoom fatigue piece is it's not just that you're having all of these relationships that way, but you're having them all from the same place in your home. And I keep seeing this online and it makes me laugh. It's like, you do your work on one screen in your house, and then you do your exercise class, and then you have a call with a friend, and then maybe you have your book club, and you're sitting in the same place. And so there's not a lot of novelty to the whole experience, and that does exhaust us.
Oh, that's really interesting. We'll definitely talk about Zoom fatigue or Zoom exhaustion and all the other aspects of our lives right now as we try to connect. And Shanita, the vast majority of SNHU students have been learning remotely for a long time from all over the country, even around the world. So given your experience, I'm really interested, Shanita, how you hear the commentary that everybody else is making right now about working and learning and connecting from home on a screen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, when you think about everything that Rachel just said, you know, you're doing a lot from the same screen. And I think people are just trying to find creative ways to be able to be their best selves as they switch from each activity to each activity. And our students and our staff have been able to, you know, find unique ways to really connect on their own and figure out what works for them so that they can also build in some breaks as well to take a breather to make sure that you have the energy and the mental stamina to be able to do all the things that, you know, you have to do.
Well, and given that you guys have been doing this for a long time, Shanita, do you kind of feel like you have a leg up on everybody else? Like, okay, let me help you out here. Let me give you some advice.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, to your point, you know, definitely doing this for over 10 years and having, you know, over 150,000 students online, we've definitely learned a lot of great best practices and have had opportunity to reiterate and really learn, like, what is the best cadence? What is the best experience? And how do you nuance it so that people can, you know, really thrive in an online environment? And as we think about our campus student experience, we were definitely able to leverage our experience and our expertise from our Office of Online Engagement, which is all about engaging students online, to really think about how does that translate and how can we leverage those skills for our current student population that was at campus. So absolutely, I feel like we've had a lot of practice, a lot of opportunity to hone our skills. And definitely, I think we're at a point where it's important to also share, right? So I think that's one of the things as a university we've been trying to do is say, hey, we've been doing this for a little while. Not saying that we're perfect, but here's some tips as people are trying to figure it out, right? We're all learning together.
Well, and we've done lots of shows on, you know, online learning, how that's going for kids and college students. But in terms of human connection, Shanita, what are some of those best practices?
Yeah. So when it comes to human connection, it really, and you think about building relationships, staying connected is really important through communication in general. And so especially during uncertain times. So I know for us, one of our best practices is each Wednesday, our university president sends out a communication to ensure employees are informed. So information, I think, is a big part of connection, feeling like you have the knowledge and the information available to make informed decisions about what's going to happen in the remainder of your week, what's happening as things are so uncertain today over time. And that's been really, really good best practice to make sure that we're sharing information across the organization at a time that they can count on. So every Wednesday that communication comes out and our employees can feel confident that we're going to know any updates, get our questions answered as well, which is important to staying connected. One of the other things that we do is we actually rolled out a social connection campaign, and we really created an online forum where employees can come together across the university and share personal videos. I think a big part of staying connected is just being able to bring your full self to the situation. And so we don't just work, but we're human beings who are mothers and fathers and, you know, aunts and uncles. And so this online forum is a place where employees can share personal videos and photos of their new workspace. Show us your new coworkers. And we got to see pictures of fur babies and their children, and show us your new workspace, which we know looks completely different today than what it looked like a few months ago. And that forum gives employees the opportunity to reply to one another and foster virtual dialogue, which has been really, really important, especially when you're trying to stay connected, feeling as though you can have conversations beyond the work. And another best practice that we've implemented is, you know, I believe that music is good for the soul. And when you think about music, it actually fosters community, and it's a really great stress reliever. So every Friday, we've been having, many of our employees have been coming together for a dance party, really just to play good music. You can bring your family and friends on the line. We can see each other dancing, learning dance moves, and just celebrating one another. And it's a really great way to connect with your peers and really close out the week.
Well, I want to remind our listeners that today in The Exchange, we are talking about the importance of staying connected even as we're still supposed to stay apart to contain the coronavirus. And we want to hear your stories. What new ways have you found to stay connected with family and friends and colleagues? Tell us about them, how you feel about them, how they're working, if there's been any surprises for you as you connect with people you care about in new ways. Our phone number for you to connect with us, 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook, use Twitter, or give us an old-fashioned phone call, 800-892-6477. So both of you, Rachel first, when this started, you know, I did see sort of a burst of creativity around, you know, Zoom cocktail hours and some of the things that both of you have mentioned. But now, Rachel, I'm starting to hear some fatigue. I texted a friend of mine the other day, very good friend, and said, do you want a video chat? And she said, no, absolutely not. You either call me on the phone or we go for a socially distant walk. I am not video chatting with anyone. She's a kindergarten teacher. She's, you know, video chatting with parents and colleagues and little children all day long. What are you seeing and hearing about this, Rachel?
Well, first of all, I love your friend. What a great answer to be aware that she said no. Right. It's first, everyone was so excited and the happy hours and let's do this together. And then it just started to dwindle and the calls are saying like, oh, there's less people showing up. What's happening here? And yeah, that fatigue is really wearing on people because it's really sinking in. This is not doing what I thought it was doing. Mm. I'm not actually feeling the same connection. And I think Shanita touched on this, which I think is really great, is that maybe we didn't know how to be intentional about what we wanted out of that interaction. And I think that's a really important piece of having these online connections, to be extra intentional. What am I looking to get out of this? What do I want to communicate to this friend? What do I need from this interaction? So there is something that we're bringing to it, because if we're coming into it more passive, I think then that's when we especially lose a lot from the screen. Looking at faces is exhausting. I'm a therapist and doing this online, we realize what's lost in sort of looking for nonverbal cues. And it's really hard to see how much is lost in what we think is technical glitches. And people are tired from looking at faces.
Can you talk a little bit more about that, Rachel? I have read a lot about how Zoom fatigue is real, and it has a lot to do with we're trying to suss out how the other person is feeling, what they're thinking, but we have lost half the nonverbal cues that we used to get. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And you see this way, and I think about being in a room with somebody, you don't even realize how much is done nonverbally. And what you're searching for, and it's not even something you're consciously looking for, so it's hard to make changes to this, is, okay, what does it mean if someone is quiet? What does silence mean? Are we worried our connection is slow? Or is the person uncomfortable? What is the emotional feeling they're having? And we also find in our really good relationships, and this happens in therapy too, the experience of mirroring, which is all about recognizing what the other is feeling, mirroring it back to them. And that's our kind of foundation of empathy. So if we're not really able to accurately mirror, there can be this discomfort and this edge that we're feeling and kind of working extra hard at something that maybe we can't even do, no matter how hard we work.
Wow, that's why it's so tiring. Shanita, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I know across the organization, you know, people are having conversations around Zoom fatigue, and we call it Ring Central fatigue, whatever channel you're using. And it's just being on and this feeling as though, you know, you're more conscious of what your hair looks like. You're, you know, you're seeing everything, scanning everything in the room. And sometimes when you're in that online channel, you're not necessarily always looking at one person. You have 20 people, right? In that gallery view, you're looking at all sorts of stimulus and information is coming to you fast and your mind is trying to process that. So a lot of people are feeling physically and emotionally tired after simply sitting in the screen. And so I know some people have joked and said, can we have videoless Friday? Like where I'm not recording by Zoom video. I just want to be. I don't want to be scanning what I look like and trying to interpret all of the nonverbals. It's a lot of stimulus. But you're right, Rachel. I mean, we depend on the nonverbal communication to really solidify, you know, does this idea make sense? Are we going in the right direction? Did I miss something? And being able to read the faces is really helpful in that. So I think, you know, over time, we'll start to develop some new skills on, I think everybody assumed that the video was the best way, but I think, you know, how do we tune into our listening a little bit more? What questions can we ask to get that validation versus always, you know, being online? And to the example you shared with your friend, I know we are going from, you know, videos all day and then you're working out on a video at night and then you connect with your family member in video. It's a lot. So a lot of times people are now trying to just text, walk with no video on, like just do walk and talks. Just to not feel on. if that
Well,
makes
that's
sense.
really, I love that. You know, instead of casual Friday, it's non-video Friday where you don't have to worry about being on screen. That's really interesting. Well, and I wonder, Shanita, you know, again, up until March, even though your students were remotely working with their professors and advisors, as you told us earlier, they were still presumably engaging with family and friends wherever they lived, you know, around the country, around the world. Now, what are you hearing, from your students, Shanita?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, students are still connecting and everybody's trying to find the right channel. So I think some people are mixing up the channels that they're using and really thinking about whether you use, is this a FaceTime call? Is this a Facebook call? I mean, people are trying at least to get some diversity in the channels that they're using to really feel like things are you know, changing a little bit, but I think people still want that connection. And I think for some of our students, I mean, you know, you're either now back at home or still living either far from family and friends. People still want to reach out. And I think social media has been a great way for a lot of people to mix up those channels by sharing pictures, creating forums and channels and groups to be able to see what's going on in everyone's life and doing updates that way to just try to share the special moments, the things that you're learning about yourself during this time with others. So I think just mixing up the channels and you know, finding groups to belong to create that space for family and friends.
Well, and again, exchange listeners, if you are mixing up the channels, as Shanita says, trying to connect with family and friends in new ways, tell us how that's going for you, how you feel about it. Again, our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Rachel, what are you hearing from your patients right now about how connected or disconnected they feel with others?
Yeah, so there's this big mix, right? We see some people saying, oh, there's this great quality of connection I'm having with my family because I'm with them more and I have this increased time, and that can be such a silver lining. And then some people really are struggling, and it makes sense in some way. I think we all are with the lack of variety in our life and just being stuck in one thing. And as Shanita just touched on, is so important. Like, how can you create variety? How can you create novel experiences? Because a lot of patients are really struggling with, I wake up, I log on to my computer, maybe I log off at the end of the day, but next thing I know, I'm scrolling Instagram and then I'm doing the Zoom call and then I'm going to bed and surprise, they're not sleeping well. So trying to figure out what can we manipulate when it feels like there's so many limitations to what we can manipulate. And I've been doing a lot of work with my patients about, well, wait, let's really be creative. And what can you manipulate? And what can you do to not feel so fatigued in every sense of the word?
And are you doing teletherapy, Rachel? I'm assuming you are.
I am. I went from being 100% in my office on a Friday to Monday starting on a telehealth platform. So
Wow. Yeah.
I
Well, I'm
was the
sure lots of
opposite of
therapists.
Shanita's experience. Yeah, it happened quickly.
And so that's 100% teletherapy. How do your patients feel about it?
Well, there's mixed feelings. You know, we all sort of said, thank goodness this is an option. I'm so glad this isn't going back 15 years or so and saying, what would we have done? Would it just have been phone? Would that have felt sufficient? So I love that there's the option, and I'm still feeling grateful for that. But I've also been opening up some conversations with patients about, well, let's talk about the phone call, because at first we all assume the video is better. But like you said before, the good old-fashioned phone call, it might not be so old-fashioned now, and we're finding some value in just talking and just listening and taking off, like Shanita was saying, the urge to perform and seeing somebody, but just listening. And there's a way that people can feel more present. So some of my patients, we've actually said, let's get on the phone and see how that feels. Let's
Sometimes
turn off
people,
our computers.
yeah, and I saw some data in several places that indicated that old-fashioned phone calls are way, way up, way, way up. Not texts, not video chat, you know, but old-fashioned phone calls because, and we in radio know this, there's sort of an intimacy to just the human voice without all the distractions. So that's really interesting what you
It
say,
is.
Rachel. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, here's,
yeah, so I've been playing around with that a bit more with patients.
Yeah. Here's an email from Karen who wrote in, who says, I am an introvert and I'm getting overwhelmed by all of my extrovert friends that want to connect 24/7 on social media and meetings. It is stressful for both sides when some of us back off. Karen, thank you so much for writing in. And Rachel, what do you think?
So great to notice what your own need is. And I think that goes back to what I was saying about being really intentional about what you need, and probably being an introvert, looking for really specific connections. And then when you have an urge, to not feel inundated by what the connection is like. And I think being able to advocate with friends and loved ones and being able to say, I really need just that one-on-one phone call. And then, you know what? I'm really signing off at the end of day. I'm needing a lot of extra time to restore, and really vocalizing what your needs are, just as you would have before, and noticing that everyone else has this increased urge to connect, trying to figure it out. And it's okay that you're not there, because there's not a right thing to do.
All right. Thank you very much for writing in, Karen. I'm guessing there's a lot of listeners who can relate to what you said. And let's take a phone call, both of you. Barclay is calling from Portsmouth. Hi, Barclay. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to share one way that I've been getting that social interaction, which surprises me. I am in my early 70s. I have four siblings, and we're spread around New England. And something that started a week or two ago is texting amongst the five of us, and one of my siblings texted three or four pictures from either when we were very little or pictures of our parents, and commenting on those. And then we can all chime in and say, oh, yeah, I remember that, and then send a photograph back of something else, often making fun of each other. But
do siblings do that, Barclay?
but we don't interact that way normally. When we would get together in big family gatherings, there might be 22 people there, including lots of little children who you want to give all your attention to. So this has been it's just been a wonderful interaction, and I feel much closer to them.
Wow. Barclay, thank you so much for calling in. That's great. And Shanita and Rachel, we're going to take a short break. But after we do, I'm going to ask both of you, what is the one strategy in particular that you find yourself going to the most? So we'll talk about that after a short break, and also get your thoughts on what Barclay told us. Keep your calls coming in at 1-800-892-6477. Tell us how you're connecting, what you like about it, what you don't like about it. You can also send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, staying connected to family, friends, and colleagues. We're still supposed to stay away from each other, but after 8 weeks of Zoom and FaceTime, you do hear more people complaining about the constant presence of screens in their lives. Still, as we're hearing, keeping connected is important to our well-being and our health. So this hour, we're exploring digital and non-digital approaches, and let's hear from you. What creative ways are you finding to connect? Are you getting tired of making the effort? Or are you finding some deeper connections that you hadn't expected, like Barclay, our last caller? You can give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook, tweet us, or again, call in at 1-800-892-6477. We're talking with Shanita Williams, Associate Vice President of Talent Engagement and Inclusion at SNHU, and Rachel Armstrong, Clinical Psychologist in Portsmouth. And Shanita, just before the break, we heard from Barclay, who said, look, I'm connecting with my siblings in a way I never thought I would. I'm kind of enjoying it. And I like what she said about, unlike family gatherings in person, where there's a million people and there's kids running around and somebody needs to refill the chip bowl. She didn't say that, but you get the picture. People are distracted, but here they're just all kind of focused on each other. I just wonder what you think, Shanita.
Yeah, no, I thought that was wonderful. And I think you are seeing that across the world right now. People just feel a little bit more present and a little bit more in tune with just reaching out. Group chats are very, very popular. It's definitely one of the methods that I use quite a bit to send out a quick hello to a group of folks with a common interest so that we can just stay connected. And I think it's important to note, we don't have the ability to walk down the hall and just do a quick, hey, how's it going? Yeah. And so for me, you know, using quick channels like text messages or chat tools that we use in Teams, just to say, I've had several people who just say, hi, the people I used to see in the hallway in the morning when I would say good morning, are now just sending a quick little chat that says, hey, just wanted you to know I'm thinking of you. Hope you have a good day. So little things are going so far, especially at this time. I think you feel a hello in a completely different way of being seen, feeling valued and feeling remembered. I think a lot of people, you know, that old adage, out of sight, out of mind. And, you know, you had the luxury of seeing people all the time to prompt you to say hello or to ask about their weekend. So now it just goes, it feels a little extra special when people who don't physically see you in present think of you in thought and reach out. So.
What about people who you're really close to, Shanita, you know, family and friends that you're not living with at this time? What's your favorite way to stay connected with those folks?
My favorite way is FaceTime. So I reach out to my sister. We do a FaceTime a meeting every day, and she's one where even though it's a screen, right, it's the people that you don't have to be on with, right? So I have on my messy hair and I cannot worry about it. We just talk about it. And sometimes I just sit my FaceTime, my phone right up while I'm cooking dinner and she's cooking dinner and we're just talking. We're asking, what are you making? What am I making? And it's just a way to just feel like we're right next to each other, cooking like we used to do when we were younger. We live in two completely different states. So we were already reaching out that way, but it's a little bit more special and we actually increase the frequency of our connection as a result of this as well. So that's our favorite channel.
That's really interesting. What do you think, Rachel? What's your favorite way to connect with people you really care about and you just can't see at this moment?
Yeah, so with those people, I've still found the mix. Some people it's absolutely FaceTime and some people it's phone. And I find it's sort of the same as it was before, which is interesting, right? To say those people who aren't close by, some of us had a phone relationship and some was more email based and some we would just talk or text and it's mostly stayed the same. And I like that. It's sort of like, this is what worked for us and this is what has helped us stay close. And so the people that I haven't been able to see, you know, if it's local people who we just aren't able to do the socially distanced walk or something, also been doing some kind of dropping off of care packages, sending mail. I have young kids, so I can take a page out of their book of they're drawing the pictures and leaving them at their friend's door. And I love that stuff to just sort of remind you, like, I'm still your neighbor. I'm still down the street. So there's a difference between the people close by and the people who are further away.
Yeah, well, and a little bit later, we will definitely talk about non-digital ways because there are many Granite Staters who have limited access or no access to the internet.
Yes.
Or I'm thinking of my elderly parents. They don't have computers or smartphones. They just have a regular phone. So we should definitely talk about that. But I'd love your thoughts, Rachel, on something Shanita said where you're connecting with someone on FaceTime or Zoom or whatever. And in a way, there's less distraction if you're only connecting with maybe one or two people. You have set aside that time for that person. No one's refilling the chip bowl. Nobody's getting up to let the dog out. You've set aside that 1 hour on Zoom or whatever to be together. So in some sense, you're more connected.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking about that as she said that. And it's interesting that I'm conflicted because we also find, and I'm thinking about this and related to therapy, for some people, therapy is really intense because you just sit with somebody. There are no distractions. You're not on your phone. There's no one walking in. You're just sitting face to face. And for some people, that's really overwhelming. And, you know, pre-pandemic, I always talked with people, like, if you're talking with someone close to you, go for the walk, go for a drive. People find some of their best conversations actually happen when they're not face to face, just with that intense eye contact. So I think there's something to that even with FaceTime. Like, I love Shanita's example. I've done some things like this. The idea of propping up your phone on FaceTime, but you're both making dinner or you're kind of sharing in something together. But maybe it doesn't have to be so intense. Maybe it doesn't have to be that trying to read the person. but instead connection through sharing something.
That's interesting. And in the second part of our show today, we're going to talk to someone who's talking about still trying to put some controls on the screen time, even though we're all relying on screens more. So, and I definitely, I have two boys who play a lot of video games. And when they play, they're always, almost always playing online with friends. So they're together, but they're sharing something, in this instance, the video game. And they seem to like that a lot. So let's go back to our listeners. And Michael sent us an email who says, the current situation and discussion seem to provide an opportunity to consider what things beyond the visual and audio comprise the experience of a, quote, exchange between people physically sharing the same space and what it means to have that taken away. Michael, thank you so much. And you know, we're all trying to do our best here, as you both have said, but he's right. What is lost, Rachel, when you don't have that real connection, that physical connection?
Well, when it comes to touch and closeness, yes, like where we started in this, feel like that increase of those good feelings, those happy neurotransmitters, that not getting as much of those, that feeling more isolated. I don't know if we know what the long-term cost of that. I mean, we're very resilient. And as more connections begin to happen, again, this is a long road, but hopefully there's some steps along the way. I think that people will really be able to rebound. And in some ways, I hope that the rebound happens because people are now going to be especially grateful for those times and really get a lot out of them, and maybe more than we did before. So while I do believe there's a cost now, there might be a great reward later for reconnecting.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, and Karen wrote us from Laconia. She points out two things that she might, she thinks might be of some comfort when staying home. Karen says it's not forever. However, losing a loved one is, therefore, Karen says, what you're doing is important. I'd go so far as to say it's patriotic to make this sacrifice for the greater good. Also, Karen says, I found that when I do go out, people such as store cashiers or even walkers who are on the other side of the street are extra friendly. That always gives me a boost. Karen, thank you so much. And, you know, Shanita, I have to say, I've kind of found the same thing walking around my local park. People are saying hello to each other. What's your your observation, Shanita?
Yeah, the same. I think, you know, when you have situations like this, the beauty of the human experience is that when we have a shared experience, it unites us in a really unique way. And you know, we're all saying we're all in this together. That is the reality. We are all in the same situation of having to be physically distant. And so seeing that person as you interact, wherever you are, you look at each other and you kind of, you know, hey, we're all trying to figure this out, right?
Yeah.
And we want to get this right. And so for me, I think it's a beautiful thing to, I think the world is so fast paced. I've heard a lot of people say, like, I feel like it's slowed down. I can see things a little differently just because we're not caught up in running to the next place, to the next, but we have to stay put. We have to be in a home and then go out intentionally. And now when you see people, it just, you see them in a completely different way. And it's just a beautiful thing in the midst of challenge to just see each other. And I think that's one of the biggest human needs, is just feeling seen in the world that is so big. But this experience is uniting us, I think, in that way, to just acknowledge that when you see one another.
Karen, thanks for writing in. And Barbara emailed, our family is entirely adults and some are quite mature. One sister is a snowbird and we were anticipating their arrival last month. In the meantime, during the pandemic, we were sharing memories of the parents and their history, sharing photos. Then our snowbird sister fell ill and died. Not COVID, Barbara says. Our response could not be the typical one, which would be to fly to her side, say goodbye, go out to dinner, hold hands. This grieving process, Barbara says, is unbelievably hard. Our children aren't still actually children, but we still really need to be together. And this is just awful, Barbara says. Any advice would be welcome. Barbara, I have read about other families that are in your situation, and it is awful. Funerals are just so important, that time to be together for the service, but also just that time for families to be together, as you said, you know, going to dinner and holding each other. It's just unbelievable that people can't support each other in this way. And Rachel, I'm wondering if you have any patients who've been through what Barbara has been through or who are worried that they are going to be in that situation. And Barbara, my heart goes out to you and your family, by the way.
Yes, my heart goes out to her as well. Feel such a weight of that email because that story, unfortunately, has become a familiar one. And I do. And whether it's someone who has died or someone who is very ill, and therefore there's, you know, definitely no opportunity of seeing them in any way in terms of protecting them. And it's just sort of grieving on top of grieving. Grieving is so hard and just an ongoing process. And then when you add to it that you have to grieve the loss of the opportunities to grieve together, it is really hard to do in isolation. And I think that even though it is not ideal, continuing to share and really talk with those people that you would like to hold and really acknowledge how hard it is to not be together and not try and minimize that at all. Because anytime we're trying to ignore that we're grieving, that we're feeling loss, that will really impact us much more.
Yeah. Well, and I really just, again, I'm very sorry about your loss, Barbara. I had a neighbor who lost her fiance a couple weeks ago, and I saw her and was talking with her, and but I couldn't hug her, and it was really, you know, it was not the way I wanted it to be. Let me just put it that way. You know, both of you, we talked a lot about digital, but we should talk about non-digital. Again, some Granite Staters don't have internet access. They don't have technology, or it's very limited. And Shanita, I just wonder what thoughts you have about connections for those folks.
Yeah, we've actually seen, you know, people really go back to note writing, writing a letter, writing a thank you card, and people just send little things in the mail, packages, I heard Rachel mentioned earlier, but really just kind of leaning on some of the basic tools, right, that are, that we've, technology has kind of swept away, but brings so much value. So I think seeing people, you know, incorporate some of the basic phone calls, like without technology, without additional add-ons, just a phone call to hear the voice, really writing that note can really go a long way and be a really heartfelt gesture, especially during this time.
I've also heard about, you know, drive-by I love yous, like some families did at Easter, at assisted living facilities, families decorating cards and waving balloons and signs, people doing that for birthdays and so forth. Rachel, how do you feel about these sort of hello parades from people's cars?
I mean, I think they're great. I think it was a really creative thing that just jumped in for people. I know some people also say, oh, it's just reminding me, like you said in a different way with your neighbor, but I want to go give the hug. I don't want to drive my horn. And so again, we're feeling torn with, well, this doesn't really feel right, but does it feel better than nothing? And I think most people are saying, I think it does. And I think that comes back to really acknowledging this isn't replacing the hug and the sitting down and sharing in something in person, but I would rather do this and show a token of love here and remember, like Shanita was saying, like, I'm still here. That feels better than nothing. And I think a lot of it is just being really thoughtful that we don't need to pretend this is replacing what we had before.
Good point. Let's take another call. This is John in Hampton Falls. Hi, John. Thanks for calling The Exchange today. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. A fascinating topic. I'm really enjoying listening to this. Well, I'm a grandfather of four grandkids, and my goal has been over, certainly before the pandemic started, to see them at least once a month, both families. And now that I can't, I Zoom with them, with my daughters and their children, once a week for sure. We're on the schedule. And I've started working with my 9-year-old granddaughter, Avery, on writing short stories. I'm a freelance writer, and she thankfully has that bug. And she actually started it by sending me the first chapter of a little book. And then my job would be to read that and add the second chapter and then send it back to her via email. And we would do that back and forth. We've done a couple of short stories so far, and it's a really good way for us to connect. And then, of course, I see her once a week in the Zoom chat, and we can talk about that more. So I'm very excited about that, and I consider that kind of low-key. As I say, we do Facebook, but I really look forward to just seeing her written word come back on my laptop.
Yeah, John, that's probably something that would not have happened if you weren't stuck away from each other. Not that this is good, but...
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not enjoying this isolation at all, and I have to admit that on her 9th birthday a couple of weeks ago, my daughter invited me to sneak down, pick up the pizza and the birthday cake, and surprise Avery because she had no idea. It's been about 8 weeks since I'd seen them.
Right.
And she came running around the corner with her arms wide open, running toward me, and you know, for a big hug. And everybody stopped. Not a panicky shriek, but we said, "Oh no, no, no! You can't. We can't hug." Which really broke our hearts because we're a very affectionate family. And we ended up elbow bumping, but it certainly isn't as satisfying. But it was great to get together, and we had pizza on the back deck, socially distanced, of course, and masks. But it was just being physically together that was very important. So there are ways that we're trying to make that happen.
Well, I really appreciate you calling. I'm kind of getting choked up with that story about your granddaughter wanting to hug you and not being able to, but you're making the best of it. And Rachel and Shanita, I just have one last question for you, and Shanita, you first. This kind of relates to what John said about getting creative with his granddaughter. Once this is past us, and sadly it could be a while, how much do you think we'll see the way that we connect with others differently? Will we hold on to some of the things we are doing now, like John and his granddaughter trading short stories? Or will we all say, thank goodness this is over, I'm never going on Zoom again? What do you think, Shanita?
Yeah, you know, I think we'll all find our own individual way. I think for some, it'll be, wow, this is wonderful. Let's keep it going. Because sometimes with technology, it's convenient, it's short, it's quick. And for some, we'll say, no, I want to go back to the way things were. That worked for me. So I think kind of going back to what Rachel said earlier, really thinking about what is it that you want to get out of whatever interaction that you're having. And, you know, did this forum or that channel provide that for you? And so I think some people will stick with it. Some people will find a blend of both. And some might just go all the way back to the way it used to be. But I think not without a lot of lessons learned and a lot of great stories to tell.
Well, Shanita, it's been really good to talk to you this morning. Thank you for making time.
Thank you.
That's Shanita Williams, Associate Vice President of Talent, Engagement, and Inclusion at SNHU. And Rachel, same question for you. Will we continue some of these new ways we're connecting, or will we say, forget it?
Yeah, I imagine that we will. And I agree with Shanita that to what extent probably really depends on each person. But some of these ways are really creative and really fun and a different way of joining. And, you know, even the story he just shared about the letters back and forth with the short story and each chapter building, like people can find like, oh, there's different ways to know how people are living in their lives and get to know them. And that's really beautiful. And I hope that what we also see changes is more appreciation of our neighbors, of our smaller community, and like saying, we can really feel like we're staying home to protect people, and that can feel really good. And then just that excitement of the wave of the neighbors that, you know, we've all come closer in our communities as our world feels smaller, and there's some real beauty there.
All right. Well, Rachel, it's been good to talk to you too. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
That's Rachel Armstrong, clinical psychologist in Portsmouth with an expertise in health psychology. Now, coming up, with so many of us connecting on screens, is there still such thing as too much screen time? We will talk about that after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Hi, my name is Christina Phillips. I'm one of the producers for The Exchange, and when it comes to the coronavirus pandemic, one thing I noticed right away when I was screening calls is that as people became more isolated, a lot of people were reaching out because they were desperate for resources. For example, during one of our early shows on unemployment, a woman called me and said, "I don't want to be on the air right now. I just don't know how to reach the Employment Security Office. Could you please give me their phone number? I don't have internet, and I heard your phone number on the radio, so I called you." And what is great is that in that moment, as the call screener, I was able to give her that information in real time, and I get the chance to talk to all kinds of listeners and take what I hear from them and bring that back to our team. So when we're planning shows, we can use that information to know what kind of coverage is best for you. We know it's a difficult time financially for so many people, But if you can, consider becoming a sustaining member or making a one-time gift to NHPR to help support the Exchange and this work that we're doing. You can donate by going to nhpr.org, and there you'll find all of our coronavirus coverage in one place. Again, that's nhpr.org, and thanks.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Remember when we used to worry about too much screen time for our kids and ourselves? How do we think about that now, given that screens feel like our best option to connect with others? Exchange listeners, what do you think about this? Have you ditched your concerns about screen time, or are you trying to control it for yourself and others in your household? Let us know. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. We're talking now with Catherine Price. She's founder of Screen Life Balance, a movement described as helping people scroll less and live more. She's also author of the book, How to Break Up with Your Phone. Catherine, welcome to The Exchange. It's really great to have you.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So here's a headline from the New York Times that might sum up how some people are feeling. I laughed when I read this. Coronavirus ended the screen time debate. Screens won. What do you think, Catherine? Should we just fold our cards and say, screen, you win?
You know, but no, I don't think we should. I mean, it's funny, though, that article, if you read to the end, because I remember seeing that headline myself, and I was like, oh, boy, okay.
Right.
It actually points out that we don't want screens to win. It's much more nuanced than that title makes it sound. No, I think that the important thing right now is to be very intentional about what we're doing in general, because we need to be taking care of ourselves and our families right now. And there's no reason to beat ourselves up for things unnecessarily. One could argue there's never a reason to do that. But in the cases of screens, I think we tend to either want to have it be, okay, we need to cut back on all screen time and beat ourselves up about using them at all, or just throw everything to the wind and say, whatever, it doesn't even matter. Let's just sit in front of a computer all day and do the same with our kids. And I think there's a middle ground there, because neither one of those is going to feel good or right now. And that it's a really an individual process to figure out what you're actually doing on your screen, whether those things are useful or necessary or actually make you feel better. And then keep those positive or necessary uses, and then identify the parts that maybe don't feel so great. For example, checking the news for the 15th time that hour probably is not the best use of your phone. And so recognizing that can allow you to choose to not engage in that behavior, but then keep doing the things that make you feel better or connected, like, say, Zoom calling with your grandchildren. That story totally made me cry, too, so thank you to that caller. I was crying as I was listening to come on.
Yeah, yeah, that was John. Again, thank you again, John. And, you know, both of our guests in our earlier segments used that word that you just used, Catherine, intentional. You know, instead of sort of making blanket statements, all screens or no screens, which really isn't an option for a lot of people these days, what do you mean by intention? I'd like to hear more from you on that.
Sure. It's just making sure that you're conscious of what you're doing in any given moment and that you feel it's the right or necessary decision for you in that moment. For example, listeners may, I'm noticing, hear a goose in the background as I'm talking or some wind chimes, and that's because I made a conscious, intentional choice to not do this interview sitting in front of my computer where I spend most of my day, but I thought I would go outside. Now it's only now that I'm realizing perhaps bird song might be distracting, so I apologize.
Oh, birds, dogs, it's all good. Go ahead.
But, you know, I'm choosing to have this moment sitting on the porch with a cup of coffee talking to you and actually being present in this human connection through technology, which is amazing. I'm very grateful for my phone and for technology right now. But in other words, like any time you're doing something on a screen or one could argue off a screen, try to get in the habit of gently checking in with yourself and asking yourself, what am I doing right now? Is it necessary? And how is it making me feel? And you ask those questions with a real spirit of curiosity, not self-judgment or berating yourself, but just real inquisitive, you know, be inquisitive about it. Same thing for your kids. I mean, yeah, I have a 5-year-old and it's been interesting to notice what the school is offering online, and then make a conscious, intentional decision as a family as to how much of that is necessary. You know, because schools are trying so hard, but being on Zoom is not that fun for anybody, let alone a kid. And then thinking, well, how can we supplement that with real life experiences for older kids and also adults? I would just encourage everyone to remember that we're not just heads sitting on bodies. We have bodies, and our bodies need to move, and we need to breathe. And sitting there staring at the screen is just not good physically for us. So don't,
right.
Again, don't beat yourself up over it, but recognize that it is really important to notice when you start to feel tense and tired of staring at that screen. Give yourself a chance for a break. So does that help with the intentionality?
It really just helps.
Checking in the moment. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Being intentional, not just sort of blindly doing it because it's easy and you can't think of anything else. And I definitely want to ask you about kids, Catherine. But a question about adults has come in from Michael, who emails. He says, what can your guest say about the physical damage possibly caused by all this screen time? Michael says, I'm an educator and my screen time has increased tenfold because of remote learning. And my vision is feeling the impact. I had LASIK eye surgery in 2005, and just from the past 2 months of strain on my eyes, I'm finding I need reading glasses now to see the screen clearly. Michael, it's a great question, and Catherine, you're a writer and a thinker, not a doctor, but I'm guessing you've got something to say about Michael's point.
Yeah, I was going to say, I do not have an MP, but I think it's an important point. First of all, congratulations for noticing that. I mean, maybe it's impossible not to notice because you can't see, but like, that's what I mean, where notice how your physical health or your emotional health is being affected by your screen time. And yes, I mean, I think if you're sitting in front of the screen, focusing on one particular distance for hours at a time and trying to read minute movements in a pixelated face of someone, or let alone an entire class worth of people, that's going to cause eye strain. I mean, that's not controversial. Like, staring at the screen for too long causes eye strain. So in that case, I think, you know, kudos to you for noticing it. And then I would ask, going back to the intentionality question, why are we so beholden to video calls in those contexts instead of thinking, well, maybe it's sometimes better just to go straight to the phone, because it can be really exhausting to try to read body language and facial cues on a screen, especially when, as is often the case, the internet connection is spotty. So you're trying to like make up with your subconscious mind the little gaps in movement when the screen freezes. So I think there's situations in which for just general communication and also for education, it might actually be better to go to a phone call instead of a Zoom call. I think we just rush to try to replicate real life, and Zoom and video calls are amazing, and sometimes they do work really well. But there are also circumstances where maybe just going to audio is actually easier for our brain to process and less exhausting mentally, in addition to relieving some of the eye strain. So I guess I would say, you know, maybe explore the possibility of maybe there are some meetings that don't have to happen on Zoom and then some class stuff that does, but recognize it's a real problem and give yourself a chance to step away and exercise focusing on different focal, you know, different distances.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I don't know if you heard, Catherine, one of our last guests, Shanita, said that some of her colleagues are asking for their, you know, their daily Zoom meetings. They're asking for video-free Fridays, so nobody has to have that exhaustion of kind of looking at what's been called sort of the Brady Bunch screen, where you've got, you know, 8 or 10 faces up. I have to ask you this, though, Catherine. You know, as someone who's been trying to create a movement for some time, long before this, to get us all to unchain a bit from our screens, what's been surprising to you about this mass movement towards screens? Out of necessity, but still.
You know, they're starting to recognize that being on screens all the time doesn't feel good. I don't want to say it is or it's not good. It's more of a judgment. But in terms of how it feels, it just doesn't feel that great to be doing Zoom calls instead of being in person. You start to yearn for the chance, you know, as Jonathan, to hug your grandchildren or to have some human experience where it's not, you know, there's not a screen in between you. And to me, I think that is good in a sense because it's crystallizing something that we were able to kind of gloss over in our previous lives when we kind of were half in person and half online. You know, you're having dinner with a friend, but you're also checking Twitter and text under the table. And now I think that any of us would gladly, if we could, put down our screen for an hour or a day if you had the chance to spend 20 minutes with someone in person. So I think it's really crystallizing the difference between in-person human interaction and screen-based interaction. And
that's interesting.
My hope is that we can choose to take some of that. This will help for us to reorient some of our priorities when we do get out of this and have the chance to interact as human beings again, rather like avatars.
So kind of being forced to do this all the time is going to make us more appreciative and intentional about connecting with people physically once this is all over, and who knows when that will be. I've got a couple emails actually from listeners, Catherine, that I'd like to share with you. Deb in Portsmouth emails, I'm connecting more with family and friends via text, calling family members more often, staying connected with coworkers while teleworking, using the communication tool Slack, which has actually made me more connected with coworkers than I was in the office. Deb says, I will have a parking lot gathering with coworkers this afternoon. outside a local restaurant. We'll order takeout food and drinks while sitting in beach chairs at least 6 feet apart. It will be good to see coworkers again in Portsmouth. Deb, thank you very much for that. And I think as the weather gets warmer, we'll be seeing more of that. Sue in Concord emails, I'm a member of the Baha'i community here in New Hampshire. We are very social people. We thrive on being together. At the very same time, our governor told us to socially distance ourselves. We discovered Zoom. Sue says, I've been Zooming so much with joy and gladness, bringing people from around the world together. I joke that I'm getting Zoom whiplash, enjoying every minute of it. Sue in Concord and Deb in Portsmouth, thank you very much for writing in. And I have to ask you one last question, Catherine, and I wish we had more time. Some adults I talk to can't wait to be face-to-face, like Deb who emailed. What about teenagers and kids, though, Catherine? How is this infusion of even more screens in their lives, and it was already said to be problematic, even more going to affect those still forming brains?
Oh, man, that's a conversation. That's a question for a whole separate conversation.
I mean, right, I think that's gets another hour of programming. Overall,
yeah, concern about screendom. I mean, I think that it's, you know, screens do make us more distracted and exhaust us mentally because we're trying to multitask too much. But I can give you a heartening story about how I think that teenagers are also reaching a breaking point of sorts where this is actually making them realize the value of in-person connection, which is that I've heard from a number of educators who have actually started using my book, How to Break Up with Your Phone, as part of their curriculum for remote learning, which is wonderful to hear. And I actually created an educator kit that if anyone out there wants to have extra resources, it's free, and it's at screenlifebalance.com. But anyway, I've heard just the other day from a teacher who had her ninth graders do this experiment I call a trial separation, where they took a full 24-hour break from their phone.
Wow.
And, which I was like, oh my God, how did you get those kids to do that even in the best of times, but let alone now? But they did it, and then she excerpted all these quotes from their reflections afterwards, and she posted this PDF with little colored boxes that had the quotes from the kids, which I can share with you for your social media if you want. But it was beautiful. It was all these kids saying, being away from my phone made me recognize the value of being in person again, or being in my actual life again. I picked up my guitar. I connected with someone over the,
Catherine,
you know, like.
I have to wrap you up there, and I do regret it. I'd love to talk to you again, but for now, thank you very much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
That's Catherine Price, founder of Screen Life Balance, and this is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.